Thanks so much, Greg. I'm happy to be backstage with our wonderful soloist, Louis Lortie. What a passionate and noble performance. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
This E minor concerto of Chopin is a youthful work, yet it immediately immerses the listener in that magical, unique sound world that's unmistakably Chopin. How could Chopin, barely 20 years old, achieve this?
It's still a puzzle for everybody today, you know, when you think of it. Even Mozart, who was one of the most precocious, didn't really find his language. You could say the really great concerto writing of Mozart happens when he's 22 years old. And Chopin already at 19, because this was written between the ages of 19 and 20, he had already reached complete understanding of where he was going with his language. So it's just amazing. And especially when you think that Chopin did not really think, he was the only composer who never thought about writing for orchestras or string instruments. He just didn't care for him. He just felt so close to the piano that that's what he wanted to do. And we know that there was a very good reason for that. He sort of invented the romantic piano.
As a pianist, what makes this concerto very special for you?
What is very special, of course, is we'd only have two concertos by Chopin. And you really have to have a conductor who understands the language of this music, because even the orchestration is unusual, let's say, for somebody who's used to the Germanic writing for orchestra. But the coloring in the orchestra is just so amazing and so important, actually. It's a big mistake to think, oh, I'll just, you know, follow the soloist. It's very, very important, and you can open a lot, and that's what I enjoyed today. A lot of, I would call it, vistas. It's very difficult to feel free in Chopin when you're not alone. If you're alone, which is 95% of his music, you're alone. But when you have a conductor behind, how much is he going to let it be free for you? It's a little bit like conducting opera, because you have to have a special sensitive ear for, I would say, for the rubato, for the freedom of the soloist. And really today I don't see anybody more than Yannick Nézet-Séguin who could do that at that level, really.
And of course he's a great opera conductor as well. And Chopin loved opera so much, Bellini and composers like that. Do you try to bring that to your own piano playing?
Absolutely. For me it's all about bel canto. But it's also about construction, you know. Chopin is such a strange mixture. He was also obsessed with the counterpoint, which is strange when you think that he was so influenced by Bellini, who were Bach and Mozart. So he had also, I think, to temper that kind of romantic yearning that he had for the voice, he tempered it with an incredible discipline about part writing in his music.
Now, you're a great interpreter of Liszt. And Liszt and Chopin could have been rivals, but they admired each other and they were great friends. Why do you think that was?
Well, unfortunately, they weren't friends for a very, very long time. That's the sad truth. They were such opposite. And actually, Chopin wasn't friends with a lot of people. I suspect that being so terribly ill, it must have been very, very difficult for him to socialize on a normal level. Can you imagine, after he was 21 and got to Paris, he would have played possibly for less than 10,000 people? Because he didn't like to play, I suspect also, because he just felt so ill all the time. Can you imagine programming a concert and then you're spitting blood? It's just terrible. So I think he just tried to avoid performing, and if he would perform, it would be just for a few people. Apparently, he was so weak that his sound would have never carried through a modern hall. Even commentators said he played the most incredible palette of colors between mezzo piano and mezzo forte. It's hard to imagine. Even Liszt said, I can imitate most of the pianists of my time, but I cannot imitate Chopin. It's just too special. It's just too unique. There is no way I can sit down and imitate his playing.
Well, that's really fascinating. I'm wondering if we could come back to your recording of the complete Chopin Etudes, which are a landmark recording. What is the essence of Chopin technique then?
Yes, I mean, it's just invented so many new figures, so many new ideas. And what's great about the Etudes, actually, he sort of scribbled down his vocabulary. It's like all the difficulties that you find in the later pieces. It's like a grammar book of Chopin, you know, when you play all the Etudes. Mm-hmm. Almost all the technical problems and musical problems that you find in later pieces are already set in the Etudes. It's amazing. He's the only composer who did that, already in his Etudes, also composed very, very, very early in his life.
And they're incredibly hard.
Yes, but again, you know, if you start them very early, they were written early, and pianists have got to cope with it also early in life.
Oh, that's a good motto for students. And speaking of students, I've noticed that you're just named Master in Residence of the Music Chapel in Belgium, which is an important school of music. And we know Chopin took his teaching very seriously. Here's a quote from Mikuli: "A holy artistic zeal burnt in him then. Every word from his lips was stimulating and inspiring." What do you think of that?
Well, you know, there are so many legends about the classes. You know, it's so frustrating nowadays to know about classes, whether it's Chopin's or Liszt, although there is more written about Liszt masterclasses. How much would we pay to just hear one masterclass or one class by Chopin or by Liszt? It must have been just incredible. We have to rely on hearsay and transcriptions, and we have to second guess a lot of things. But then it opens the door to so many interpretations, and I think that's why, can you imagine, every 4 years, I think, there is this Chopin competition in Warsaw. And it inspires so many gifted young musicians, and they all come with new ideas. You know, you would think maybe the well would be dry after a while, you know. But recently, for some reason, I went on YouTube. I wanted to check something about a Polonaise or something, and I fell on the last competition, and I heard so many incredible musicians who had incredibly fresh ideas, and within the style, you know, there are so many possibilities.
I think that's wonderful that an artist of your level is still open to fresh ideas and also to the playing of younger people.
You know, people always keep trying, saying, you know, oh, it's not the way it used to be, and now everybody's becoming so mechanical, and everybody's so only obsessed with technique. Well, I'm not sure about that. I think there are lots of young people who have a lot of personality in their playing. Maybe they don't make the career that they should. That's another point, though. Who is, you know, it was always like that. To win a competition, you have to have a kind of basic denominator for all the judges. And very often, unfortunately, it's a type of technical perfection which is irrelevant to the music. You know, like, you know, who cares if there's a memory slip when the interpretation is grandiose, you know? So on that, I certainly have a different viewpoint, which is why maybe I never do juries, because it just kills me.
Oh, speaking of that unique voice, one of your teachers was a student of Alfred Cortot, the great French pianist whose recordings still breathe with so much life and spontaneity. What ideas did you get from her about his teaching and his playing?
Well, it's very, you know, I was so young. I don't think she mentioned him that clearly, plus I would have sort of forgotten now. But, you know, it's a schooling that is just doesn't exist anymore. Like, if you look at the Cortot editions, anybody who wants to know what Cortot was about, just look at the editions. There are more words than written music notes, because he gives so many options about the way to work any passage, about the way to feel these passages. He was also a poet. There's only one video of him on YouTube when you see him playing the last piece of the childhood scenes of Schumann. And it's just so inspired. And it's so idiosyncratic when you watch his hands, very long fingers, you know, almost completely flat on the keys. It's just absolutely fascinating. It's just a type of vision that we don't see anymore. I would call it a global vision. It's somebody who really didn't care about practicing technique. For him, was sort of something that we had to do, but was not the main thing. You know, he probably started a little too late to take care of that, because there are so many wrong notes in his interpretation. But thank God, the inspiration is just so strong. I think it's good to replace our sense of values.
What's new for you on the horizon, Louis?
Oh, too busy. I have projects, and I have this contract of a lifetime with Chandos, you know. As you age, it takes time to prepare things, so it's a lot of discipline to be able to prepare. We have very interesting projects now. We're, of course, continuing on the Chopin series, and also something very new. Chandos is a British company, but I never played any British music for them, which is very strange. So I sort of fell in love with the Vaughan Williams Piano Concerto, which is not a very well-known piece, but I just think it's a great piece, and nobody plays it. So I'm now struggling with that. And
that's so exciting. When is that coming out?
Well, there will be two recordings, because that piece was so difficult that the soloist suggested to change it for a two-piano concerto. So there are two versions of the same piece, and I'm going to do both.
That's wonderful. Well, it was just such a wonderful pleasure to speak with you, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Very kind of you. Nice to meet you.